Okay, well, campers, it's so good to see all, and we've got some fun to start off with today, right? Okay, we don't have a test, we have a true-false quiz, though, to start off. Okay. So you got pencils. So this
we can't
is
pick up our pencil. Do you say so?
What?
I said we can't pick up the pencil. Do you say go?
Oh, you can go.
What
can
page
go.
Are we on? 17.
Okay, I'll be back when you get
1751.
Back.
1751.
Well, you can make this an open book if you want to, but.
I'm not.
What? But. Being in Romans won't help you at the moment.
Well,
for the quiz, yes, we'll be.
Well, I know the
name
first
was
question.
Abraham.
I don't know about the rest of them.
How about this?
What?
Oh, Abram.
So go ahead and mark your quiz there. These 10 questions, either true or false. Well, you have a 50-50 shot on each of these.
We did that last week. Was Abraham not Abraham?
Question number one, or statement number one. His birth name was Abram, not Abraham.
True.
That is correct.
Golly.
What?
Golly. That was a good guess, wasn't it?
I did.
Okay.
I did, too. I guess right.
Number two, he was born in Ur, a town that would be in present-day eastern Iraq.
True.
False.
It's true. It's true.
Do I mark check by the ones that I get wrong?
You can put a chart right. Check mark. This where you're self grading these. Okay. Number three, he was 75 years old when God told him to move to a land he would show him.
True.
I
didn't
true.
Think he was 75. Okay,
yep.
I got that.
75.
Right.
He was right.
Yeah, he was right.
Well,
number four, I changed.
Remember, this was when he was told to move, not when he was told about having a kid. So.
Oh, well, maybe that's
better. Yeah, see? So, number four. After he got to the land he had been promised, a famine struck. Forcing him to move to Egypt.
True.
That's true.
That is true. Question number five. While he was in Egypt, fearing for his own life, he claimed that his wife was actually his unmarried sister and then gave her to the Pharaoh.
True.
False.
It is true.
Oh, so that's good.
Yes.
Yeah, I missed that. I missed that.
Question six, or statement six. Later, while in the land of Gerar, he told the king of that land that his wife was his unmarried sister, giving her to him. What?
True.
Yeah.
Oh, I was right on that. How many times did he give her away?
Apparently twice.
He had just saved his own life.
Apparently twice. What do you think of that?
That's bad.
Yeah.
They may miss that question. I remember that he gave her away once.
What did he do? Go take her away from Pharaoh and go on to the other land and give her away again?
Well, no. Actually, what happened in the first case of Pharaoh, God didn't like it, and he sent a plague on them then. And Pharaoh goes, what gives? What did I do? And oh, so actually that's one way that Abraham got rich as well, because once Pharaoh figured it out and said, I got to get rid of you, please leave. Here, take money, take slaves with you while you're going. And so in the end it made Abraham richer than he was. So, but and then he did it again when he was in a different place, because he was afraid for his life, right? So number seven, since Abraham's wife was barren, and just to make sure we all know, unable to have children, Abraham impregnated his wife's own handmaiden in order to secure an heir.
True.
That is true indeed.
Well, what's a handmaid?
Servant.
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 Okay.
When God told him that his wife was to give birth at the age of 90, Abraham laughed so hard that he fell down.
True.
That's true. Yes.
He fell down.
He fell down. Laughing so hard.
Go boom. Yeah.
He didn't hurt himself then.
Well, 90 years old, I'd fall down too. I wouldn't be able to get back
there. Number nine, giving in to his wife's ire, Abraham banished the maid and their son to the wilderness, providing them with only a small amount of food and water for the trip.
True.
That is true indeed. Yes.
You did.
And number 10, initially, Abraham disobeyed God's command to sacrifice his son Isaac, attempting to hide him from God.
False.
That is false. So, first nine were all true. Last one was false.
Right. Good start. That would be worth a flip.
So, how'd you do?
I missed one.
Well, now that we know a little bit more about Abraham, right, it brings to mind the question of, based on all this that we now know about him, what do you think of Abraham? Was he a great guy?
No.
Well, why do you say that?
Everybody would lie about his wife and his unmarried sister. And
he was more concerned with himself than he was his wife.
Family pen.
But
send that poor woman out in the wilderness with just a little bit of food and water.
Yeah.
And
his
own child?
His child.
Yeah.
She got him back.
Yeah. So, if this is the case, why in the heck is Paul, and for that matter, other New Testament writers, looking up to Abraham? You'll notice a section we're beginning this, chapter 4, it just says right then, Abraham justified by faith. So why in the world would they lift up Abraham or Abram?
Because he had a child of 90.
Well, actually, he was older than 90. What'd you say, Jim?
He changed. After that child was born, he changed and...
Well, but
he had to for them to look up to him.
Well,
he didn't change so much if he sent him out in the wilderness in his own child in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Hardly any food.
That's just like saying you sin, you can't be forgiven.
Oh. So, why would Paul be so interested in it? So let's go to our text here, chapter 4, verse 1. Are y'all there? We are on page 1751. Mm-hmm.
I had one question, and the child survived. Did he not survive?
Ishmael did survive because God came to their rescue.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, said of Ishmael, yes, there'll be a great nation coming from your family too, which if we were of the Islamic faith, we would trace our origin story back to Abraham's mm-hmm. son Ishmael. Mm-hmm. So that's where why Islam is considered to be a Abrahamic faith, just like Christianity and Judaism, because it started with Abraham, but it was with his other child. And the promise was to go through Abraham's child through his wife, Sarah. Mm-hmm. So that's the promise over there. But God made a separate kind of thing, saying, I'll make a great nation out of you two. So did that answer? So that, yes, it did survive. The handmaiden, whose name I kept going through my mind, and I kept... What?
Starts with
Haggai?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Was, or Hagar. Hagar. Yeah. One of those. starts with an H. But she survives too, obviously. It said God heard her calling and crying out and came to their rescue. So there you go. So let's actually back up to verse 31 of the previous chapter, because it's connected to all this. Do we then nullify the law by this faith? Not at all. Rather, we uphold the law. What then shall we say that Abraham, our forefather, discovered in this matter? If in fact Abraham was justified by works, he had something to boast about, but not before God. What does the scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Now, when a man works, his wages are not credited to him as a gift, but as an obligation. However, to the man who does not work, but trusts God who justifies the wicked, his faith is credited as righteousness. David says the same thing when he speaks of the blessedness of the man to whom God credits righteousness apart from works. Blessed are they whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man whose sin the Lord will never count against him. So, prior to Abraham, who were the Jewish people?
Ask that again.
Prior to Abraham, who were the Jewish people?
The Israelites.
No, well, no, because they didn't exist.
That's true.
See, that was a trick question.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, they did not exist. There was no Jewish people, because there had been no covenant made. Now, I will say that there were a couple other covenants that had been made, right? One with, after, when Adam and Eve had to leave, there was a covenant. And there was another covenant that was made. You remember what that one was? It has to deal with a phenomenon of nature?
Noah.
The Noah.
The flood.
And that was a covenant that not going to flood the earth again, right, like this. That's the Noah covenant. But is it for a people? It's for everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's What's the big difference between the Abrahamic covenant? I will be your people, or I will be your God, and you will be my people. So there was no such thing as the Hebrew people or the Jewish people until God said to Abraham, I will make a great nation of you. So, at the very top of this pyramid of the Jewish people, the chosen people, is Abraham. No one is before him. He's the very, very beginning. There's no covenant, no chosen people, until God says to Abraham, it's going to be from you, right?
I thought Adam and Eve was chosen.
No, they were created. But they were not his chosen people. Because what happened to all the people later, except for eight?
They were killed.
They were killed by the flood.
Yeah.
Right? So they were his creation, as is are all people. But in the act with Abraham, God has said, I'm choosing y'all. Actually, he didn't say the word y'all.
He hadn't been the guy to say.
Yeah, remember he was up north. So let's. What Paul is doing is, of course, going back to the book of Genesis, the quote part of what he says. So let's go back to. Chapter 15 of Genesis, which you can find on page 20. Now we've got it. Chapter 15. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram. Notice the name there?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Abram. In a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me, since I remain childless, and the one who will inherit my estate is Eleazar of Damascus? And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. Abraham believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. So, in this part of this Abram story, I guess we could call it, he is childless, right? But God says, I'm going to give you an inheritance. I'm going to give you what? That means a gift. Going to give you a gift, right? And your family tree is going to be how big?
More than the stars in the heavens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how many is that?
We don't
know. That's a lot.
That's a lot. He had a bunch of kids after he was 90 and ended.
Well, but actually, no, he only had.
He had two kids,
one through the handmaid, one through his wife, but as with family trees, they increased and multiplied throughout the centuries. Mm-hmm. So when he was saying you're going to have a lot of descendants, that's what he was meaning. It's going to move on down that line. You're going to continue to increase and multiply, right? But Abram believed the Lord, and God credited to him, Abram, as righteousness. So that's where Paul is getting this part of the story from, so he can turn back. A few other facts, a couple other facts that we didn't put in that quiz, right? Abram's own father was considered to be an idol worshiper, right? His father, his parents, his family, he came from a pagan family, right? There was no law yet, right? Because when did the law come?
With Moses.
Right. And at this point in the story, there is also not, what also has not happened yet? Snip, snip.
Circumcision.
Yes. Paul talks a lot about circumcision, doesn't he? But it's important to his arguments here. Look, so if God is saying, look, he believed, Abraham believed, right? Mm-hmm. And by believing, he was credited, or another translation would use the word reckoned. And you know what it means when we say reckoned, right? Not as in, well, I reckoned to do that, but a bank reckoning, right? What happens in a bank reckoning?
An agreement or...
Well, you go through and check to make sure,
balance.
You know, you get your, I'm sure you all, every time you get your bank statement, you're in there reckoning, right? No? Okay. But it's, you know, crediting, reckoning, making sure things act up. And righteousness means in the right place with God, right? Mm-hmm. And all of this was done by Abraham. God credited him with righteousness, and yet, what had Abraham, or Abram at this point, done to get that credit?
Just believe.
That was it. Yeah. That was it. Abraham's relationship with God wasn't based on anything that Abraham had done except simply to trust in God. And yet, that's where it all began, right? Mm-hmm. That's all Abram at this time did was to believe and trust in God. When you go to verse 4 then, and 5 here, This was really kind of interesting. Now, when a man works, his wages are not credited to him as a gift, but as an obligation. So, you are in the employ of someone, right? And you put in your 40 hours, right? And the employer then has to do what?
Pay you.
Why does he have to pay you?
He's obligated.
You worked for it, and there is an obligation. There's federal laws that say, you know, if someone has worked 40 hours, you can't say, oh, I'm going to hold back your wages. You've got to pay them, right? In a different aspect of this, you know, what about, you know, you saying to children, do you want your allowance? What do you got to do?
Chores.
You got to do chores. So there is a direct, quid pro quo here going on here. You have to do this. You have to prove. You have to put in those full 40 hours before I'm going to give you your money, right? But what does he say in verse 5 then? However, to the man who does not work, but trusts God who justifies the wicked, his faith is credited as righteousness. So the man who doesn't work still gets paid. What do you think of that?
I quit.
You quit.
They still do that today.
Well, we're not talking
about... I don't think too much of it myself.
But. Well, but there it is.
I thought they believed.
Because he believed. That's, again, the key thing. It's not what you do. It's not whether you followed the law, whether you said your prayers just right, whether you gave enough money to your church or your synagogue or whatever. None of that is what gets credited to you as righteousness.
No, it's your faith. I don't want to ask you.
What?
I want to ask you something.
Okay. What are you going to ask me, Jim?
You mean you're saying that as long as a man believes in God, he can go out and do anything he wants to do?
I didn't say that.
What'd you say?
I said that it's not by what one does.
It's by righteousness. It's believing in God.
Well, it's righteousness comes through
faith.
But
you said a man didn't have to work.
Not to be made righteous, because who makes one righteous?
God.
Well, that's true. I understand that. But I mean, I can just sit, get in my recliner and sit there and I'll say I believe in God. And I'm going
so
to heaven.
Give me a paycheck.
Yeah. But do you really?
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
Well,
they can say it, but not believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's easy to say something. Mm-hmm. But you see, what Paul's point is being here, it's not by the work that you do that you are made righteous.
Well,
God does that. And what he is asking to be saved is for you to believe. Now, what you're worried about, I'm guessing, is, well, yeah, can I just, all I do is lie around then after that? And Paul will actually confront that argument later on in this book as well, too. Because the answer is, well, no, because it's not enough just to say I believe, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, but we do what we do in response to the fact that we have believed in God. We don't do it because we want to say, we want to earn our way into heaven.
Can't
do it. We're not good enough. A wonderful quote I was going to use later, but this seems appropriate now, that I saw. Think about this. We want our salvation as wages, not mercy. We want our salvation as wages, not mercy. We don't want a gift. We want to earn it. And that's not the way God works. Because if any of us have to earn our gold star from God, we're never going to get it.
That's right.
Because God is perfect. And to be in his company, then, we have to either be perfect or be given a gift of his grace. And that's a part of the big news, the grace of God that has come down to us. As he said, I've given you my son. And he sacrificed himself for y'all. Yeah, you probably can say y'all.
Y'all.
But this is why this is incredibly good news. Now, what does God expect of us when we have accepted that? Well, number one, he expects us to do what?
Ask
be faithful to him.
Well, that will come, but what's the first and the greatest commandments?
Love God.
Love God.
Love God. followed by
love thy neighbor as thyself.
Love one another. You see, we like to make things complicated sometimes, too complicated, but it comes down to that. We've been given a gift of grace, and what does God ask us in return? To love him and to love each other. Mm-hmm. And by loving each other, which is not easy to do, is it?
No.
But that's how we show our love for God, is by loving each other. And God gives all this as a gift to us, right? But we still, at this time, we want to earn our way. We want to earn our righteousness as opposed to accepting it and then showing our thanks by doing loving God and each other. That's the difference here. That's the good news. And that's something spectacular, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure that everyone who read this letter at this point had probably the very same reaction that Jim had, right?
I don't know about that, but I...
Well, I'm betting they did. What are you talking about here? This isn't right. Remember, Jesus had a similar story that he told a parable on when he talked about the laborers. And the owner of the field went out at the first of the day, and what did he do? He hired a bunch of people to go out. Well, partway through the day, he says, this is not enough laborers. I'm going to go hire some more. So 3 hours later, he gets some more. And then that's still not enough. 3 hours later, he's getting some more. And then later on, he gets more. And then he gets to around about 3 o'clock. And, well, I need to hire some more. So he goes out and gets some more people. And then it comes to the end of the day. And what did he pay them?
Same thing.
Wait a second. The people who came in at 8 o'clock in the morning are saying, you're paying us the same that you paid these people that you brought in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? That's not fair. But you know what? Jesus says, that's kind of the way the kingdom of God works. Doesn't mean it's fair. But those who labor in the fields get their wages by a gift, not because you earned it. So Paul is just, you know, again, that story had not been written down, but I'm sure it was in the vernacular and the thoughts of people who had passed it along. That's that kind of same thing. Look, it's a gift from God. And what you do with that gift is up to you, if you go and do it. So it's not that you don't have to do work, but that why are you doing it is the big question. Because, you know, Abraham didn't have something to boast about. That's what Paul says. I can't go to God and boast about all the things I did. Because compared to what God did? Oh, that looks a little meager, doesn't it? Comparatively. Well, what'd you do today? Oh, I helped an old lady across the street. What'd you do, God? I created the entire universe. Yeah, that's a little hard to compare. So, to further back up what he's saying then, though, he quotes a psalm, which is actually Psalm 32, if you go to page 869. There you go. Psalm 32. Now, these first two, Paul is quoting here. Blessed is he whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man whose sin the Lord does not count against him, and in whose spirit is no deceit. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. Sort of sounds a little bit like Job there, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. Therefore, let everyone who is godly pray to you while you may be found. Surely when the mighty waters rise, they will not reach him. You are my hiding place. You will protect me from trouble and surround me with songs of deliverance. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will counsel you and watch over you. Do not be like the horse or the mule, which have no understanding, but must be controlled by bit and bridle, or they will not come to you. Many are the woes of the wicked, but the Lord's unfailing love surrounds the man who trusts him. Rejoice in the Lord and be glad, you righteous. Sing, all you who are upright in heart. So God covers our sins, as opposed to what was the idea in verse 3, that, well, we'll cover them ourselves. We'll try to cover them up. We'll be silent, right? But what happens when you're silent about it?
You waste away.
You waste away. The hand is heavy on you, right? But then in verse 5, suddenly the focus changes, and he says, look, I acknowledged my sin. I did that thing about somebody had said something about forgiveness earlier. Yeah, right. That's what you're pointing out. Look, I confessed my sins. I asked for forgiveness. And you forgave the guilt of my sin. You forgave, right? It's a big thing. Then notice after that, in fact, verse 5, do you see the word sin again from verses 6 through 10 or 6 through 11? Mm-hmm. It's not mentioned once. It's not brought up once. Because the rest of this is spent praising God and saying, I will help others to understand what's going on too here. So the message of this psalm really comes down to what?
Sins.
What?
Believe in God and confess your sins, yeah. And he will help you to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let everyone who is godly pray. What's it mean to be godly? How about faithful? Mm-hmm. You could substitute that word. Mm-hmm. You know? Being godly means not being godlike, but rather being faithful to God. Right? And then when you get to that verse 10, you know, but the Lord's unfailing love surrounds the man who trusts him. What's another way of saying trust him?
Believes.
Has faith. Right? So the message of the psalm that's attributed to David here is simply to be righteous means to be forgiven, open to God, depend on him, be godly, instead of trying to be self-righteous, right?
Mm-hmm.
So notice that Paul in this all of 8 verses now has quoted back into 2 parts of the Old Testament, the Old Scripture, first from Genesis, now from Psalm, all to reinforce his points as to what he's trying to do here, and saying, look, this is all connected. What happened with Jesus is connected to what's been foretold already. Now, so, next step is to take it just a little bit further with this. So verse 9 of Romans chapter 4. Is this blessedness only for the circumcised, or also for the uncircumcised? We have been saying that Abraham's faith was credited to him as righteousness. Under what circumstances was it credited? Well, think about that. Okay, under what circumstances was that credited when we're talking about circumcision? When was that righteousness credited to him? What? Was it before or after he was circumcised?
After.
Think about it again. Before. What we read from that passage from, what was it, chapter 15 of Genesis, circumcision didn't come till chapter 17 of Genesis. So when God said, we credit him with righteousness, circumcision was not a thing yet. Right? So under what circumstances was it credited? Was it after he was circumcised or before?
Before.
It was not after, but before. And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness that he had by faith while he was still uncircumcised. See where he's taking this argument? Abraham was deemed righteous before circumcision. Not so, therefore, does circumcision make one righteous?
No.
No. So then, he is the father of all who believe but have not been circumcised, in order that righteousness might be credited to them. And he is also the father of the circumcised, who not only are circumcised, but who also walk in the footsteps of the faith that our father Abraham had before he was circumcised. So Abraham had his faith before there was circumcision, before there was the law, right? Mm-hmm. And in this part of the passage here, he's also making another connection. Now, if you go back to verse 1 of this chapter, right? So what then shall we say that Abraham, our forefather, discovered in this matter? Now, another translation of this, let me put it the way it is from the NRSV, because this is kind of important and unfortunately gets a little bit lost in this translation. What then shall we say that Abraham, our ancestor according to the flesh, discovered in this matter? Which it sounds a little bit different than saying our forefather. Because when we think about forefathers here in this nation, what do we think of? What?
The founders.
Yeah, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, all that. Are we related to them?
No.
No, not that I'm aware of, please, anyone. But you see, the closer translation, our ancestor according to the flesh. What does that mean? How is that different from saying our forefathers?
It's like DNA.
Your father, same. Your grandfather,
yeah.
Your great-grandfather.
Yeah. These people are all related. Yeah. They're your kin. Their DNA is shared. It's saying these, and who is he referring to there, right? The Jewish people, all the descendants of Abraham. So I think this is a little bit better to read it that way, ancestor according to the flesh. That's who he's talking about. These are the people who have been circumcised. These are all direct, well, somehow or another, direct descendants. They have the blood of Abraham somewhere in their DNA code, right? And he's saying, look, I lost my place. Okay. He's talking about them when he talks about the circumcised, and he says, at the very last line of verse 11 there, at the end of the page there, so then, he is the father, I'm having trouble turning the page, the father of all who believe but have not been circumcised, in order that the righteousness might be credited to them. So, wait a second. Abraham, we know, is the father of the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. But what's Paul saying now about Abraham? He's the father of all believers. Mm-hmm. You know, we are engrafted into Abraham's family because of what?
Belief.
Because we believe. And by believing, that means we are made
righteous.
Right? Mm-hmm. So right by our belief in God, that's how we become part of Abraham's family, right?
Right.
Even if we haven't been circumcised. Right? But what about those who actually are blood relatives, right? What about them?
What do you mean, what about?
Well,
they're not anymore.
What?
Did you say circumcised?
And he is also the father of the circumcised.
Yeah, and
but is it just being circumcised that makes them?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No. No. Because why?
They walk in the they believe and they walk in the,
but they also walk in the footsteps of the faith that Abraham had when
before he was
circumcised. Yeah. So what Paul is pointing out here is that we Christians, Gentiles that we became a part of his family the same way that Abraham did, by believing. Mm-hmm. Not by what we did, other than that we believe. Circumcision itself is not the ticket, it's just a sign of that connection. But it's not the thing that counts. Do you believe that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
Yeah, and it will be credit to you. We can't be circumcised, and we believe.
Well,
children of God.
Well, technically, women can be.
Well, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, you don't. But there are places in the world where it is
they do it
a ritual.
They do, that's right.
Yeah. So, in some places it's considered mutilation. In other places it's considered the proper practice.
Yeah, but it's like the mutilation.
Yeah. So, Abraham is the figure, the head of a one huge, huge family. Not only the people who are blood relatives, but to those who believe. Right? So, welcome to the family, all.
Thank you, sir.
So, any questions?
It's very interesting. Good lesson.
Y'all know about Abraham now, right?
Yeah.
All that. So. Okay.